Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Know Your Foe episode. This week, the big game, of course, against the Steelers in Pittsburgh. Joining us to talk about the Steelers, tell us all about their personnel and scheme, is Alex Cazora. Alex, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. Appreciate you having me on. Things are pretty good right now. Better than, I think, the last time we spoke. Pittsburgh has an offense, a quarterback, a modern passing game, so I can't complain.
All right. Definitely a big one this week. Lots of rivalry heading through this, players on the team, a lot of trash talking in both directions that I've seen already this week. We'll talk about some of that maybe early on here, but maybe take us a quick road through the Steelers offseason this year, because I think three of the names that moved around and we might talk about here were offseason acquisitions or departures from the Steelers.
Yeah, I think that two biggest ones are obviously offensive coordinator and quarterback, the two sore spots that Pittsburgh has had to deal with really during the final years of Ben Roethlisberger, and then replacing Big Ben and trying to find that guy. And there's still a question about who is going to be the future longer term. But in terms of acquisitions, Matt Canada fired midway through last year, replaced by interim coaches. Neither of them got the full-time job. Pittsburgh goes out. They wanted to get a veteran OC who had been there, done that. Wasn't the first time NFL play caller like the previous two coordinators and Randy Feitner and Matt Canada, who did not have the success Pittsburgh looked for. And so they only interviewed a handful of candidates, Smith one of them. They hired him. That was certainly a critical change, not necessarily in philosophy, but just in competency and being able to present Pittsburgh's vision to the table, which the Steelers largely have done this year. And then quarterback, the three quarterbacks on the roster last year, gone. Kenny Pickett traded, Mason Rudolph, free agent, signed with Tennessee, Mitch Trubisky released, went back to Buffalo, brought in a whole new quarterback room. Should you guys know the story, Russell Wilson, one-year deal, veteran minimum, because Denver's on the hook for the other near $40 million. Justin Fields, trade rumors for months, end up getting him 1 week after Wilson signed, the day after Kenny Pickett asked for and received his trade to Philadelphia. Then they signed Kyle Allen to be their veteran third-string quarterback. So those are the two headline situations, acquisitions, additions in offensive coordinator and quarterback.
Okay, obviously bigger moves than some of the ex-Ravens involved. From a Ravens perspective, Patrick Queen is now a Steeler, and he's wearing the green dot and has done some talking.
He has, yeah. And he talked today on Wednesday and revealed that he was not offered a contract by Baltimore on his way out, which I don't know is terribly surprising. I don't think anyone expected Queen to come back after they traded for and paid Roquan Smith and drafted Trenton Simpson, but revealed that it bothered him and he has not spoken to Harbaugh or to Cost or anyone since exiting Baltimore. So there's a chip on his shoulder. Yeah, certainly don't want to overlook the free agent signing of Patrick Queen. That is the largest free agent signing in Steelers history, a three-year, $41 million contract. That one was a surprise. I knew Pittsburgh was going to go after an inside linebacker. They needed to address the position. I didn't think they were going to go after the biggest prize in Patrick Queen. So obviously this game means a lot for him and the storylines in storylines of Steelers Ravens.
It's a very protected contract that they have. I mean, Queen was thinking he was going to get 4 years, $72 million, or even north of that, you know, something Roquan-esque money. Didn't get anywhere near it. And the Steelers have a ejector seat on the contract after 1 year. That's pretty favorable.
Yeah, I forget the exact language of the deal, but it was less than what we anticipated. And Pittsburgh has a general philosophy of not having guaranteed money past year one, except for quarterbacks in top of the market deals. TJ Watt has it, Minkah Fitzpatrick has it, but they were number one at their position whenever they signed and extended their contracts. Queen does not have that. So it's a deal certainly favorable to Pittsburgh, but the intent, as it often is for Pittsburgh, is to keep these guys for the duration of their contract. And so far, Queen has played well enough that he'll obviously be back in 2025 and hopefully beyond.
Okay, now that's interesting that you're saying that, because I would have said that Queen had not really played that well this year. You know, I've watched a few games, certainly. You've watched more. The statistics are not looking good for him. He's got 13 stops and 11 missed tackles, which is kind of the strikeout to walk ratio for inside linebackers. You want to have a good relationship between those two. Whereas Trenton Simpson is sitting at, I think, 5-1, 20-4 right now. And Roquan is in good shape in that category as well. But, you know, Roquan Sear certainly is not been perfect from a coverage perspective. But Queen had his best game of the year, certainly this last week.
He did against Washington. He was fantastic. He led the team with seven tackles, had two for a loss, a pass breakup, and just showed the sideline to sideline range that Pittsburgh signed him to be. And yeah, I know the numbers may not always represent it. And he's had his issues. You're right, the missed tackles, the run defense. He's not that quite downhill thumper linebacker, obviously, in coverage. I think he's good in zone. I don't think he's that great in man. I think there are a few good coverage or man coverage linebackers in football. It's like Fred Warner, probably Roquan, not much else after that. So I kind of am more generous to those guys. But I think, you know, Queen has had to bear that responsibility of a new scheme to be the green dot guy, be the every down guy. There's a weight and responsibility and adjustment that comes along with that. You know, in terms of splash plays, I know Pittsburgh fans have been wanting some bigger, more impactful plays. Those things will ebb and flow. You can't force those things to happen. And so I'm not overly concerned about that. And as you said, he's coming off his best game against Washington. He'll have to replicate that against a similarly built offense in Baltimore.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see how that works out. Deshaun Elliott, now a Steeler, playing on the back end, also had a little bit of talking to do this week, because a little bit hurt by not getting a contract from the Ravens and some of the other things, that the other safety problems they've had, he was actually seemed to be fairly happy about.
Talk about really key free agent and offseason acquisitions. I would say two, Elliott being one of them. Cornerback Donte Jackson, acquired in the Deontay Johnson deal, have been really important. But Elliott is just built for AFC North football. Obviously, mm-hmm. he's a former Raven, but he is a hitter. He's physical. And when they signed him, Ken, I supported and was excited about it, not because I thought Elliott would play as well as he has this year, but it was really critical to get a defined, strong safety in Pittsburgh's system. Last year, they had this committee approach with Keanu Neal, DeMonte Casey, where Neal would play in base, Casey would play in sub, and they didn't really like Casey as an in-the-box player. And so what that did, it forced Minkah Fitzpatrick to play down low. He played in the box about 20% of the time last year. Now, he got hurt last year, too, was in and out of the lineup. But that's he can play, but it's not ideal for him or for mm-hmm. the team. This year, when you had Elliott, your every down, true strong safety, Minkah can go back and play his true free safety spot. He's only played in the box a handful of snaps this year, probably about 1%, excluding goal line and that type stuff. So it's been really important to allow Minkah to be Minkah and for Elliott to be that strong safety. But his play itself, he's a hammer against the run. Does a great job in the alley, coming down, tackling. He's made impact plays in coverage. He had one poor game against Dallas, but that was really it. So for the price they got him, which was really cheap overall, he has been an excellent addition to this defense.
Now, this won't hold up for the whole season, but Deshaun Elliott so far this year, 18 stops. Those are defensive wins, tackles for defensive wins. Only two missed tackles, which is, first of all, it's unbelievable for a safety because they typically make plays further from the line of scrimmage, but it's just a fantastic number. It definitely attests to what you're saying about him being a great run fit player.
Yeah, he's been really disciplined, a really good tackler, and also made some plays in coverage. He's got an interception or two this season. Mm-hmm. He certainly held his own there. It's not going to be his MO. He's certainly going to be more known as that classic box type, but he's been available, durable, hasn't missed a snap. They do take him out in dime packages, at least when they're fully healthy, they have, which is one really interesting decision. Don't love the idea, but it's not a deal breaker.
Why wouldn't he literally move up and play the dime? That role was built for him.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think, one, they want to get DeMonte Casey some snaps, and so in dime, he goes out there, and they've had, in the past, they had a guy named Corey Trice Jr., second-year corner they liked, who was playing well before he got hurt early in the season. Then they used Terrell Edmonds, their former first-round pick, who's now been released, and they just got back Cam Sutton off suspension. He's kind of been working as that dime player. He's a more natural coverage guy. So, yeah, it's been a little curious, but that's just how they've decided to approach things.
Interesting. Because Elliott, my feeling about it, he's always a guided missile to the midsection of any nearby receiver to the ball is headed to. He's not a natural loose bracket player, not a center fielder, not a play for the overthrow guy. He wants to separate the receiver into two pieces, you know, as he gets the football. But anyway, he's a good player. I always liked him, but good to see him playing so well. Yes, the third player we need to talk about before we go any further is Deontay Johnson. And obviously, Deontay's already had some cryptic tweets in Baltimore. Obviously, something was going on that was more than what was clear to the naked eye in terms of his play at Carolina. I do believe they were just trying to get rid of him for whatever they could get for him, which means there's usually something more to it than that, because they really got nothing from the Ravens in the trade. And then you see Mike Tomlin with this hilarious podium exercising, talking about it.
Yeah, those comments, they were certainly controversial in the sense of the national attention that they got. I don't think he meant it as the dig it probably came off as. I think it was just an honest off-the-cuff answer, and the reality of Johnson just not being super involved, being just traded for in the Thursday night game and just not having time to really pick up the system. But it was a funny comment for sure that I knew would attract some attention from Baltimore side.
There's certain things I look for, and someone has made the suggestion that this might be the reason Tomlin wears sunglasses all the time on the field, even at, like, it seems like even at night games, but I'm sure that's not true.
I think it pretty much is true.
Okay. Well, anyway, as he went through that, okay, his eyes were extraordinarily expressive. There's a lot of coach speak going on. He's trying to get through it in terms of, to be honest, we've got other players who are really taking our attention. Well, there was nothing untrue about anything he said. It was just the fact that his eyes were popping open and whatnot that were really.
Yeah, but with the Deontay stuff, I don't think Deontay's a bad guy. I think he's a really hard worker. I think he got, in some sense, a bad rap by some of the Steelers fans, but there is certainly some culture stuff that probably wasn't a great fit, that probably wore out his welcome in Pittsburgh. And that seems to be why he got traded. It wasn't for a lack of talent. There just was probably always some kind of simmering frustration that would boil when things got bad. And I think Pittsburgh wanted a reset, didn't like that and that relationship. And then you have George Pickens, and those guys kind of fueled each other, maybe in some sense. Might have been the calculation, hard to say for sure, but talented player, but certainly can be frustrating. And I think Baltimore's already feeling that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I couldn't figure out a good reason why they made the trade other than he's an insurance policy in case either Flowers or Bateman will get hurt. But he shouldn't be taking snaps from either of them. And the 11 personnel guys, they've actually, you know, ratcheted up a notch. If you've seen what Tylan Wallace has done recently, for example, he's averaging almost 30 yards a catch and or 30 yards a target for that matter, because he caught all five balls thrown to him. And and Aguilar, you know, played well last year, certainly as well as pretty much on a rate basis any season of Johnson's career, because Johnson's always been a real low yards per target guy. So I'm having trouble understanding it. Now, I know, the Ravens offense, the Henry Lamar mesh point typically floats all boats, but it didn't seem like a high value signing. It wasn't a real high cost signing. So I guess that's the beauty of the thing.
Yeah. It's going to cost you guys probably 15 draft picks. It sounds like the fifth slots. And sixth round swap there. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I meant to say in 15 slots, you know what I meant there. Yeah. Obviously not 15 draft picks. So if it doesn't work out, he's a free agent after the year. You wipe your hands. It did feel like insurance. He does have a bit of a Zay Flowers type feel, you know, quick twitch, yak capable. Flowers probably the better receiver. I think everyone would agree to that. But it felt a little more insurance than it did, priority of getting this guy a big time role.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, let's move on, because everybody kind of knows what the Deontay Johnson's, all these listeners do, what the Deontay Johnson's situation is in Baltimore. And let's talk a little bit about Russell Wilson and what he brought to the offense. First of all, Fields to Wilson, a change in itself. And you guys are not, the two of us were doing a little bit of DMing back and forth when this was happening. And I hope this didn't come off as me thinking that Fields had lost his job at the time, but he was in the middle of a difficult game and came back to actually play pretty well in that game. I thought he probably had earned himself a little bit of a leash. Can you kind of take us through what happened?
Yeah, it's been a funky situation and a lot of unknown. And I would just say broadly, the one thing Mike Tomlin hasn't had to do much of throughout his career is figure out a quarterback. You inherited Ben, the rare head coach that gets hired that has his franchise quarterback there and didn't have to worry about it until his retirement. And so there's kind of been this feeling out factor of how does Tomlin handle some of these more difficult decisions he just simply hasn't had to make throughout the majority of his career. There was 2019 when Ben got hurt. You're deciding between Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges. It didn't really matter who you picked. The results were not going to be appreciably better. So what happened there, Russell Wilson was brought in first. He was their intended starter. There was framing it between him and Pickett, but Russ was going to certainly start. And then he gets a calf injury, pushing a sled during the training camp conditioning test before the first actual practice of training camp. Why they're asking quarterbacks to push sleds is a fantastic question. I don't have an answer to. Hopefully that does not happen again. So he misses most of training camp, comes back late in camp, is declared the week one starter shortly after the third preseason game. Thursday before the week one opener, hurts his calf again in practice before, I think it was an individual session. Doesn't play. Fields is the guy. They're very careful with Russell Wilson. Fields off to a good start. Pittsburgh's winning atop the division. Make the change for that first game would have been week 7 against the Jets. Short answer for my long-winded response, why did Tomlin make this change? Fields had played well, no question about that, but the offense structurally, Ken, was basically the same, 17, 20 points per game, win that kind of low-scoring slugfest. For Pittsburgh, that has and can get them in the playoffs. It's not getting them over the playoff hump of a team that has not won a playoff game since 2016, their longest drought since the 1970 merger. And Tomlin's calculation was, if we're going to compete and have a chance to beat Kansas City, Baltimore, Buffalo, Houston, whatever high-scoring offense you want to put out there, we got to try to do something else. We're going down that same path. And the calculation was, can Wilson elevate this offense to a new level? And clearly, through three games, he has. His intangibles, play action has been, I think, the biggest benefit. He's much more effective at selling the play fake for a Steelers system that now runs a ton of play action, among the most in football. That has been critical. In his first two starts, Wilson had more yards off of play action than Justin Fields had in his first six. And so that's been a big time change and why this offense has improved.
Do they run most of the offense now under center with Wilson to run play action, or do they run play action from shotgun?
It's both, but the most effective, their real vertical play pass game comes from under center. They want to marry the inside zone with boots and the vertical pass game. Mm-hmm. And so those are kind of the core concepts for this offense.
Is Wilson an equally adept booter left or right, or is it typically zone block left, naked boot right?
Mostly right, right-handed quarterback. He can go left, but it is traditionally going to his right side, yes.
Okay. All right. And then is he a traditional 3-2-1 reader on the levels, or does he – they often have it called for like an over route to be the first look and then drop to the first read?
Yeah, what I would say about him, he's not – I wouldn't call him the most cerebral quarterback in a – you know, Peyton Manning type of vein or Drew Brees type. That's why it didn't work in Denver last year, because Sean Payton wanted this real cold, calculated, anticipatory thrower. Wilson's not that, but he's somebody that can understand what a defense is trying to do, what the picture they're presenting, and where to go with the football. So it's probably a little still a little too early to kind of break it down into the type of thrower that he is, at least than what he's been in Pittsburgh, but he has a good grasp of what defenses are trying to do. He knows where his playmakers are at and how to get them the football. And that's been the other big thing, trusting his receivers, trusting guys like George Pickens, throwing that moon ball to Mike Williams last week, allowing his guys the opportunity to make plays, where Justin Fields was a little more hesitant, wouldn't always take those shots, probably because he wanted to make sure he's protecting the football, because that's been his whole issue throughout his time in Chicago, was turnovers and negativity, and he wanted to protect against that. And Pittsburgh was scheming to protect him and be conservative. They've opened things up more with Russell Wilson. So, yeah, I would just say that, you know, he's not the most anticipatory thrower, but he can read a defense, obviously, with his veteran experience, and can understand what a defense is trying to do against him.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the receivers in terms of what you've got. Take us through that, including the tight ends.
Yeah, new guy Mike Williams traded hours before the Tuesday deadline. Got 9 snaps last week. His first catch, that 32-yard game-winning touchdown, when wasn't supposed to be in there, only in there because of injury to Calvin Austin, who will play this weekend. George Pickens still remains, though, this number one receiver of the offense. I mean, he's the number one receiver. I wouldn't say the offense flows through him. Arthur Smith still loves to spread the love and spread the football around, but he's obviously the top target for this team. Beyond that, it's kind of been a collection of free agent signings and kind of some, you know, number three types probably punching above their weight and playing larger roles than they should. You got Van Jefferson, who was with Arthur Smith last year. You have Calvin Austin, who's their speedster, their big play guy. Not a lot of volume, but certainly I call him kind of a popcorn guy. He's going to pop every, you know, now and then. Had a big punt return touchdown earlier this year. Has a 50-yard touchdown through the air as a receiver this season. 2 receiving scores, averaging over 18 yards per catch. And so those are some of the receivers that have been kind of rotating in and out. Jefferson does more dirty work, cracking safety, stock blocking, getting involved in the run game type stuff. And then Williams really is going to scratch that itch of being that vertical down the sideline type of guy to go run under some of those Russell Wilson passes. I don't think the explosion is really there in his legs anymore for Williams, but he's a big guy. He's a contested catch guy that's going to fit this offense pretty well. So those are the base names at receiver. They had a rookie receiver in Roman Wilson, who's only appeared in 1 game this year. He's been plagued by injuries. He's on IR, will not play in this game. So those are the top names. Ben Skowronek has gotten activated off of injured reserve. He's playing in some 13 personnel, big blocker type stuff.
Okay. All right, tight ends?
Yeah, it's a tight end heavy world. It is the true Arthur Smith experience, where it's 12 personnel, 13 personnel, very multiple in that sense. So Pat Freiermuth remains this team's number one tight end. You know, he's standing up. He's kind of playing a quasi-receiver role. He's standing up about half the time this year as opposed to previous years where he was doing that about a third of the time or so. And so they're minimizing his lack of inline blocking and utilizing him as a receiver, which is where his strongest asset's going to be to this team. I think the one name to really note here is Darnell Washington, the second-year player out of Georgia. I think he's really taken a leap. Last year was really a blocker only in terms of the run game, very little involvement as a receiver. He's still not being used as a down-the-seam type of guy this year, but off-boot action. I think literally every single one of his 11 catches this year have come off of play action in terms of just boot action, roll to the right and hit him in the flat and get some yards after the catch. maybe there was one. Actually, I take that back. There was one jump ball touchdown they threw to him against Denver earlier this year, but that's kind of been his role. He's actually pass blocking a lot more. He's doing that about 40% of the time, whereas last year was about 20%. So there was real emphasis in training camp on him as a pass protector, again, off of play action. Whenever he does stay in, can be an asset there, but he's really come into his own as a run blocker. His snap timing has improved by a big, significant jump in terms of just firing off the ball quicker, so he's not late and can utilize his length and his strength. And then behind that, Michael Pruitt is a blocker only, a little bit of fullback work, and Connor Hayward's kind of a chess piece that gets 5-10 snaps per game. Athletic, has a touchdown this year, but it's not been all that involved in the pass game.
Okay. All right, fair enough. That running back, this is going to be a matchup, I believe, of the two best tackling teams in football. I believe the Ravens are the best and the Steelers are the second best. That's how it's graded by PFF in terms of missed tackle rate. The Ravens' missed tackle rate's just a shade over 10%. It's been under that for a few weeks in a row, but they're at 10.2 now. I did not check the Steelers to see that. That's something I always do before we do the matchup show. But is there been a generalized improvement in the Steelers' tackling this year?
I don't have the exact numbers. We have a guy on staff at Steelers Depot, Josh Carney, that does the missed tackle report each week. There have been some lulls against the Jets, for example. They've had some issues tackling those bigger backs in space. I know Breece Hall had popped him for a 50-plus yard run against the Jets, and there's been some occasional miscues there. The Colts game, they weren't as good, but you know how it is. A Mike Tomlin outfit, a Pittsburgh Steelers defense, typically a strong tackling team, and overall they have been good. They played really fundamentally sound and tackled well the last several weeks. The Giants game, they gave up a bunch of yards on the run, but it was less from a missed tackle perspective and just not being as gap sound. So, yeah, short answer, I would say that this team is tackled at a reasonable level, and the numbers sound like they're doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, so I just checked it out myself. It's 10 per using PFF missed tackles, which are very strict, but I always like to use a consistent source. They're at 10.5%, so I'm sure they'd be second in the National Football League. So but the reason I asked about the missed tackles was to stay with the offense and talk about the Steelers running backs who have been very adept in 2023 in particular in forcing tons of missed tackles. Now, Najee Harris, do we know what his situation is yet for this game?
He's going to play. I know he had the ankle. He didn't practice today. He'll be out there. He's not missed a game his entire career. I promise you, he's not going to miss this one.
Okay. Now, he's second, I believe, in the entire NFL in missed tackles forced. And then Warren had been a big force last year in terms of missed tackles. What's happened with him this year?
He's had some injuries. The good news is he and this running back room is healthy overall, and that's one of the few times this year that they've been fully healthy, even when they were all on the field. Warren had a hamstring injury in the summer. He did play in the opener, played in the second game, got pulled midway through the third game with a knee injury, missed about a month of the season. Cordero Patterson had an ankle injury in week four. He just came back this past week, and so it's really nice to have all those three guys available to you because they haven't really been either active or healthy together to have that true rotation and true, roles of Harris, your early down guy, Warren playing third downs, rotating in on some early downs, get the occasional possession himself, and then Patterson kind of doing both, probably more third down work than anything, but he can mix in and wear a couple different hats and do kick return stuff as well. So Harris has been the guy. It's been his best season. I think he's been a looser runner this year, Ken. He dropped about 8 pounds this offseason, from about 242 to 235. I don't know exactly what he's playing at right now, but there was an intention to, I think, get a little more explosive, get a little bit looser, get some longer runs of 20, 25-plus yards, because he just felt like a ceiling where he just literally rarely popped off a run longer than 20 or 25 yards. You've got multiple of those. His numbers have really jumped up this year, and he's just been a little more agile. The power's still there. He can certainly drag the defense 5-6 yards, but there's been a little bit more pop. He's not Derrick Henry where he's going to run away from the entire secondary, but there is a little bit more. His cuts are quicker. You can kind of get out of a hole a little bit easier. Just been a looser, more agile type of running back this year. It's been a really good year for Najee Harris.
Compare and contrast Najee Harris as a runner to somebody like Le'Veon Bell. And when I think of Bell, I think of a high degree of patience. Does Najee have some of that as well, or is he more a see-hole, hit-hole guy?
Yeah, it's more of the latter. I mean, there's a little bit of that. People talk about his vision, and there's been a lot of critique about that. I think that can be tough to judge. I think trying to judge a play live and knowing what hole you're supposed to hit and what you're reading. I think it's easy to kind of armchair that, and we have the advantage of the eye in the sky and the slow-mo replay to really critique that with a fine-tooth comb. I think his vision overall has been fine, but he's not that wait, go runner that Le'Veon Bell was. That style was just so unique to him, so it's hard to make that comparison. He does feel a little more like Bell in the sense of being a little lighter of a runner, where there's a little bit of, he can float a little bit more this year, not to the level that Bell could, but you feel a little bit more like that this year, where he can win in different ways, where it's not just fastball the entire time, but just power. There's a changeup to him where he can make some guys miss and be able to hit the second level with a little more explosiveness than we've seen in the past.
Le'Veon Bell's history, definitely one of the things people looked at in devaluing running backs as they age, which I think is probably appropriate anyway. Ravens happen to have hit on one in Henry. Saquon Barkley is having a big year this year as well in terms of a big running back contract. But took a while to come back after the big Le'Veon contract with the Jets didn't work out so badly.
Yeah, Pittsburgh, again, they changed their approach. It used to be they wanted that defined workhorse running back, and Harris, in some respects, has had to shoulder that more this year because of the running back injuries, but there is an openness to using a committee to keeping guys fresh and hopefully winning the fourth quarter. I think about the Chargers game where Pittsburgh really ran into a brick wall for the first three quarters, but that wall busted down in the fourth quarter. And, of course, the offensive line is helping, and I think one big reason why you're seeing some bigger runs from Harris this year is you're getting better blocking from the receivers. I always say that I think receivers turn good runs into great runs, where those guys can be able to get that second level, third level block that springs a runner. And I think Pittsburgh has done a better job of that this year. And that is one reason why Harris has had, you know, more success and more explosive runs downfield.
Take us through left to right on the offensive line while we're here.
That's been an adventure this year. It's luckily calmed down, but Pittsburgh's vision of what they expected to have week one to what they have now is a big change. And so left tackle, just to run through them, the expected starting five this weekend: Dan Moore at left tackle, Isaac Seumalo at left guard, Zach Frazier at center, the rookie, a rookie at right guard, and Mason McCormick, and then Broderick Jones at right tackle. They've lost two guys to injuries.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium, 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms, at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride, prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app. Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Dish, well, more than two, but they've lost right guard James Daniels for the season to an Achilles injury, which was super crushing. Free agent after this year, he was playing great football. Really felt bad for him. Their first round pick of 2024, Troy Polamalu, dislocated his kneecap in practice after his first career start. He's out for the regular season. A chance he could come back for the playoffs, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. They lost their technical starting center in training camp in Nate Herbig, but he was replaced by Zach Frazier, who was likely going to start week one anyway. Frazier himself missed some time with an ankle injury. Their left guard, Say Molly, missed the first month of the season with a pec injury. He's now back. And so it has been a lot of shuffling. The group, again, has finally settled down. They're healthier overall. Dan Moore's having his best season. He's been the kind of certainly not been a fan favorite in Pittsburgh in past years, but he's really playing his best football. Contract year, he's a guy that's going to get paid this offseason. Say Marlin's done okay. Frazier's been one of the best young centers in football, even more impressive than what I thought. Go ahead, Ken.
Well, what I want to say is with Dan Moore, left tackle, if he hits the market, what would you expect him to earn maybe if in terms of a contract? Because Ronnie Stanley might be out there. Dan Moore a lot younger, if you want to go for that.
Yeah, and his durability is spotless. He's missed, I think, one career game in his NFL career. So tackling his prime with his durability, it's hard to gauge. There's no line tax, as you know. You got to pay those guys extra out there. Those left tackles don't grow on trees. I would say somewhere, if I'm just guessing, and I'm not the cap guy, but 15, 17 million per year. It's a lot more than people thought it would be. But when you have his resume and his play, want to see him against Myles Garrett in 2 weeks, that's always been the toughest challenge, and rightfully so. But Moore's really come into his own. He's gotten better each year, hard worker, well-deserved, and I'm really happy to see his success this season.
Only two penalties for Moore this year, and I see one of them was declined, so one of them had to be a post-snap foul. That's exceptionally good for a tackle at this point with this many snaps.
Yeah, and he's just gotten comfortable. They rotated O-line coaches early in his career. They have Pat Meyer, who really works independent hands, and I think Moore's gotten really comfortable in terms of not using that two-hand punch, but being able to punch independently, left hand, right hand, and he's gotten better against bull rushes. His big issue in the past was just handling power and handling bull rushes and having a better strike and placement than just being able to stall some of those things out. He's done a much better job in terms of handling that, and he's been a good run blocker, a really solid teammate. I mean, listen, they drafted two first-round tackles the last 2 years. No one expected Dan Moore to still be this team's starting left tackle. And he held them all off. It's been the best tackle, been healthy, and playing really well.
Faltano would be the guy who would move there next year in all likelihood if Moore leaves?
Pittsburgh likes being weird with their offensive linemen, a little unpredictable, but it would likely be Broderick Jones. This team, when they drafted Faltani, who did play left tackle at Washington, they were intent almost from the get-go, he's going to be a right tackle. That's all he practiced in training camp. He had an injury this summer, but they were fully intent to make him a right tackle despite being that left tackle in college. And so Broderick Jones, in all likelihood, would go over to left tackle. Jones himself is a whole another story. He's had a really poor year until this Washington game. That was his best game of the season. I think he needed a bye week to kind of reset and get some focus and some confidence back. So I'm still kind of jury out on Broderick Jones, but as things stand today, he's the most likely guy to go to left tackle, assuming that Moore is playing elsewhere in 2025.
All right. To kind of give me a division between 12 and 11 and maybe some other things like 13. How often do they go with a standard old 11 versus something else that's heavier?
I should have checked our charting beforehand. I apologize. We track, you know, what personnel grouping they're in, but the Steelers of old is out the window. As you guys know, Pittsburgh has 11 personnel. That's their base. That's no longer their base. They are a 12 personnel, multi-tight end type of team. Now, they're going to run 11. They're going to mix and match personnel, but they are certainly going to rotate and roll out 12, 13. They've even run the occasional 14 personnel of four true tight ends on the field this season. So, again, it is that true, like I said earlier, Arthur Smith experience. So I don't have the exact splits, but they're up there probably for the league high in terms of 12 personnel, 13 personnel. It's probably not as intense and as clear cut as Atlanta last year. I think in Atlanta last year, they ran 11 personnel 17% of the time, despite being a team with a losing record. Pittsburgh is running 11 more this year, but it is a big shift between 11 being their predominant package to 12 being probably the plurality package they've used this year.
Okay. All right, that kind of clarifies it. By the way, I just had someone on the show a couple of weeks ago who was talking about heavy personnel by team in the NFL, and the Ravens were by far the heaviest team. The second heaviest, and this is in terms of tight ends, fullbacks, and OL6s on the field on a per-play basis, or it was actually two things. It was like the number of snaps they played in 11, 12, and 22, I think it was, versus the EPA on those plays. I don't remember the Steelers being exceptionally high. The number two team is a surprising one. It's the Dolphins, but the second heaviest team in the entire NFL, which that doesn't resonate with me right away. But
right.
We're one of the last ones I would have guessed.
Yeah, I don't know exactly where Pittsburgh is at in some of those rankings. But also, to be clear, when they run those, you know, heavier tight end sets, it's not always packed and tight. They're going to spread things out. They're going to go empty occasionally. They're going to, you know, have these guys on their feet. And so it's not necessarily to always pack things in. It may be where we're going to keep you guys in base and we're going to spread things out and make you cover. So there's a different approach to how they use their multi-tight ends because they got some versatile pieces there.
All right, I think we talked about some of the common plays. Let's move over to the defense here. I always like to start with what does the defense look like on third down on an obvious passing situation? Highest leverage. You mentioned the dime early. They go to that?
Yeah, they're still generally doing that in third, six, third, and seven plus, which has been their personality for several seasons now. Like I said, Cam Sutton coming back, he was the dime guy last week, and so there's been some shuffling there. They had Corey Trace. He got hurt. Terrell Edmonds came in, and then Sutton's now replaced him. So in dime, there's six DBs out there. Joey Porter Jr., Dante Jackson, Beanie Bishop, your three corners. Cam Sutton, your dime guy. And then, like I said, Elliott is often coming off. And then DeMonte Casey and Minkah Fitzpatrick are your other safeties. But they're going to rotate, and Sutton gives them a lot of flexibility because he can play basically everything. He plays slot corner, can play that kind of dimebacker or over role, can play outside corner. And they can do a lot of post-snap rotations where Minkah Fitzpatrick can present as the post-safety pre-snap and then roll down post-snap, and Sutton can replace him as a safety. Sutton in training camp was working almost exclusively as a safety. And so they're going to really allow Minkah to be able to disguise his role a lot more with a guy like Cam Sutton back in this lineup.
Okay. All right, very good. That's been a big problem for the Ravens, by the way, that year, but we don't need to talk about that. Let's move on to the defensive line. And I know Pittsburgh's ways, one of the philosophical differences from the Ravens is just had a tremendous number of snaps concentrated in relatively few players. Whether they've been 4-3 or 3-4, you know, for the last, I'll say 25 years, that seems to have always been true. How are they spreading out snaps with Hayward being older now?
There has been some focus on reducing Hayward's snap count to a degree. He's not quite at the 80%, you know, continually that he's been in years past, but you're right. I mean, it's still your top three or your top three, and there's not going to be a ton of budging and rotation there of Keanu Benton at nose tackle, Cam Hayward at right defensive end, Larry Ogunjobi at left defensive end. Those are your three primary guys. And Benton in his second year can now rotate more in sub packages and nickel. And so those guys will kind of be your three in your sub package situations too, where, you know, one of them gets a rest, the other two are on the field. Pittsburgh lost their backup nose tackle, Montrevious Adams, to a knee injury. He's on IR, will not play in this game. They don't really have a true backup nose tackle. They don't have a big need to probably use one. Their base rate is among the lowest it's been in the last decade. And so they've been in sub package a lot more than past years. Hayward, though, there was a lot of questions about him. He's 35, coming off a groin injury last year. Could he still be the Cam Hayward of old? He has been, and potentially even more. The power is still there. Mm-hmm. Explosiveness is back. Now that he's healthy, he has been, for my money, one of the best interior defensive linemen in football. Still going to be a handful. Benton has been a twinge disappointing There's still athleticism. I still like his game. He has that crazy good club over. Like, Linderbaum has to expect the first rush attempt from Ben's going to be that club over that is wicked, wicked good, but there's no number two move off of that that's going to threaten. And I did a study on this that if you look at his club over win rate, it falls off by the second half because guys have seen it, they adjust to it, and he's not having that success he's having early on in games. Ogunjobi's been a little hot and cold, but he's had a better season this year than past year. So long story short is that, yeah, those are your top three guys. They're going to rotate. They're going to mix and match. They occasionally will run some amoeba front with one down lineman only with a couple extra linebackers on the field. That's one way to try to reduce snap counts a little bit, but those are the primary top three guys to worry about.
Do they activate four IDL per week, or do they activate five? And there's just some name that I don't know about here.
It's been six, I think. I'm trying to think back on the names here in terms of true defensive linemen. Your top three, Isaiah Lattimore, a rotational base end, not much pass rush juice, but he's improved as a run stuffer. Dean Lowry, a former Minnesota Viking and Green Bay Packer. And is there anybody else? Once Adams went down, they have not really replaced him. So I guess that's going to be the five there. But whenever they've had everyone available, they've run six deep.
Okay, so Lowry, Loudermilk, Ogunjobi, Hayward, and Benton.
Those are the guys. Yeah, now Lowry's barely playing. He's gotten the occasional backup nose tackle rep. I guess he's kind of the de facto backup nose tackle. Loudermilk will get 10 or 12 snaps per game. Again, is that base rotational end by left side or right side? But your top three are definitely still your top three.
Okay, just as an aside to Ravens fans here, this is why I get so pissed off at the Ravens when they have four IDLs active for a game. You have no safety blanket at all with injuries. Now, the Steelers, they play their top guys most of the snaps. You just heard it from Alex. And they still want to have six ready for game day. Is any like kicking special teams play that those extra defensive linemen are involved in?
Yeah, well, even Cam Hayward's still in field goal block team, even at 35. He still is out there doing it, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, later. Pittsburgh special teams has been fantastic. They blocked, two field goals and a punt this year? I mean, they've been on a tear. They had a stretch where they blocked a kicker punt in three straight games, and Lowry has one of them. Who has the other? Moon, former Baltimore Raven Jeremiah Moon, has one on a punt this year, and I'm blanking on who has the other field goal block this year. But there's certainly some value there. It's not why they're active. It's not, I don't know if Brent Urban was ever active solely for his field goal block.
No.
Prowess, but it's probably not that. But those guys are assets out there too, but they're out there for just that. And I will say, once we get to corner, I'll have the same complaint because Pittsburgh has been, before Sutton came back, dressing four corners, which felt crazy, crazy light, like playing with a lot of fire there. So I guess it's kind of the inverse. Pittsburgh, that's their personality. Have extra defensive linemen. We'll deal with corner. We'll be okay.
Okay. All right. Very interesting there. Okay. Let's move to the second level and the linebacker group. And I guess you can include the edges there as well.
Yeah, it's been some injuries there too, and I thought Pittsburgh was really proactive and had a lot of foresight in acquiring Preston Smith before the deadline. We all knew that Pittsburgh was likely to add a receiver before the deadline. They've been talked about it endlessly, and it might not have been a star prize in Ayuk or Devontae Adams, but getting Mike Williams, I didn't bat an eye. I just went. It felt like Mike Williams was a Steeler a month before he actually became a Steeler because we just talked about him so much. But getting Preston Smith from Green Bay for a seventh-round pick next year was a steal. And Alex Highsmith unfortunately turned his ankle late in that win over Washington. He will not play in this game against Baltimore. The good news is Nick Herbig, who had a hamstring injury in Week 5, will return, barring a setback, and play in this game. So you'll have T.J. Watt, of course, still T.J. Watt, Herbig, Preston Smith as your top three. I thought Smith looked good. He's a big body. He wasn't comfortable playing in the 4-3 Green Bay switch to this past year. He requested a trade and got that to Pittsburgh and playing in that natural 3-4 he's used to. And then again, former Baltimore Raven Jeremiah Moon is at number four. He did not play a single defensive snap last week. So if he does play, it'll be limited defensively for Jeremiah Moon.
Watt plays about 90% of the snaps, right? I'm just noticing it's about 510 for him and Minka's or Queen is around 560 to lead the defense. So it sounds like Watt's playing pretty much 90. He almost never comes off the field.
Yeah, Watt comes off whenever he wants to come off, which is not often, but they literally don't tell him to come out. He just subs off whenever he feels like he has to sub off and needs a breather. So he's fortunately been the lone healthy edge rusher this year in Pittsburgh and still TJ Watt, still finding ways to impact the game. Even when he's getting all the doubles and chips and all the attention, he'll get I'm really excited to see the matchup between him and Falele this weekend, just because I wonder if the size that Falele has can Watt dip under that and kind of beat him around the edge and be able to bend through. But I know you guys will give a lot of help and attention to DJ Watt.
So it's Rosengarten is now the right tackle for the Ravens.
Oh, Falele
has been playing right guard, but that's okay, because still a lot of the edges come inside and try and cross the face of Falele. And we've seen that from, you know, Zadarius Smith and others. So I would expect Watt to give that a shot.
Okay. Yeah. They'll stunt him. Often their response to that, those chips, is to stunt inside and to try to avoid the chip in the first place. So you'll still get that matchup some. But yeah, I apologize. I forgot that. I think Rosengarten's done okay. It seems like he's done a decent job, it sounded like.
Yeah, he's on track for a rookie lineman, is what I say. He's having about a C-minus year. I'm a tough grader, but I'd still say a C-minus year. And that's a good place to be in your rookie year in the NFL. It's hard to be any better.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think Watt has actually occasionally had more issues against those younger linemen that don't have as much tape study, because Watt is a just studious player where he really wants to learn the opponent. And when you're facing somebody that just simply has less tape out there, have maybe less tells and less of a book on them, I think he's actually struggled a bit more. He went against DJ Glaze from the Raiders this year and didn't have a great game against him. And I think it's kind of one of those things where you just don't know as much about the guy. It's harder to get a read on them. So we'll see how that goes. But Watt can impact the game in so many ways beyond just getting pressure. He's not just a pure pass rusher. His run defense, his chase on the backside, coverage, which he's not doing a ton of, dropping about 6 or 7% of the time this year. But Watt's a complete player, and that's what separates him from some other more pure pass rush guys, that he can truly do it all and impact the game really no matter how you game plan against him. And of course, the attention he gives, I compare it to an elite receiver. If he commands double teams, somebody else is singled up on the other side, and those guys win. So there's always going to be an impact that TJ Watt offers.
Well, that means, it may mean Hayward is getting a single on the inside. Of course, if you chip, you then give up eligible receivers, whatever it is. You know, obviously, you only got 11 guys, and they got 11 guys. You got to work it out.
So. Exactly. Especially against the tight end teams like Baltimore, that wants to throw to their tight end, you keep your tight end and help. He's no longer part of the progression. That was against the Raiders, an issue with Brock Bowers. They're trying to figure out ways to scheme it. You're trading things off. So that's always a challenge. And again, that's one reason why Watt really helps his whole defense go.
So have they faced read option teams? I guess they faced Daniels just recently, but who are the other, from a read option perspective, have they faced? And the reason I ask the question is, are the Steelers making an obvious attempt to just go directly after the quarterback on read plays and give up on the running back in some situations?
Yeah, to answer the first question, Daniels was the most obvious example. They have faced two others this year. They faced about a quarter of Anthony Richardson with the Colts before he got hurt, and then they faced Daniel Jones. And Pittsburgh did not stop the run well in those moments, partially because those edge guys get held and at the mesh point, and they can't pursue the backside as aggressively. Because what teams will try to do in a nutshell is they want to run zone away from TJ Watt. They don't want to run to TJ Watt. And he just crashes down backside. He's unblocked and cleans those plays up. And so when you have that, you know, mesh point, that read option slows those guys down. Pittsburgh can't play as fast and as physical. Against Washington, they did a great job containing Jane Daniels. He rushed for 5 yards, his lowest of the season. They did do a lot of that mesh charge where they're going to attack the mesh point. They're going to force the give. They're going to eliminate the read, and they're going to force to give every single time. And they've done that against Lamar and RG3 when he started, you know, for Baltimore years back. Mm-hmm. And so that's not anything new. As you said, the trade-off to that is, okay, we're taking away the quarterback run threat. You're going to allow the running back to have more success. We're now defending the run with 10 because we got one guy responsible for the quarterback. When it's Austin Eckler, you can live with that. You can say, well, Austin Eckler beats us, so be it, but we're confident he's not going to kill us. Even against some of the past Baltimore running backs, Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, who's a good player, but not Derrick Henry. Do you have that same calculation of, you know, hoping that Derrick Henry doesn't beat you? Because he probably will. And so that's going to be a really fun chess match. Now, Pittsburgh does more than just mesh charge. They're going to slant and scrape. They're going to, you know, have somebody, usually say T.J. Watt, he's going to slant down. He'll take the running back. The linebacker will scrape over the top and take the quarterback. They're going to do some different things. It's not going to be just mesh charge. And so I wonder how Pittsburgh will approach it. But that cat and mouse game of how you handle the read option, which you told me, I feel like Baltimore's doing a little less of this year. I've seen it in some short yardage situations. I don't know if the knee injury for Lamar is maybe impacting that a little bit, or just Henry's overall success is changing the equation. But that'll be a really big game plan matchup.
It's interesting because I think the threat of the mesh is more important than the mesh itself. I say what I've been saying is that the Lamar Henry mesh point is the most powerful weapon in the NFL right now. But it's really just the threat of it. They've gone more with Lamar under center. They've had a little bit more success probably with Lamar reacquiring the field, and Lamar's been extremely good at avoiding pressure and navigating through the pocket to avoid pressure and throwing well in those situations. He says he's been very successful. For instance, last week he threw much better under pressure than he did with ample time and spacer when the ball was out quickly, which is unusual. But he's over 12 yards a throw under those situations. So anyway, it's been a good year, obviously, for Lamar so far, and we'll see if he can navigate pressure in the same way against the Steelers team, which is extremely good and well versed in containing him.
Yeah, I would also just say to stick with the linebackers, the off-ball guys. Mentioned Patrick Queen, their every down guy, their green dot guy. They came into the season with a clear division of labor where Landon Roberts would play in their base 3-4. Peyton Wilson, the third round rookie, would play nickel. That has shifted. Wilson has been losing nickel snaps to Landon Roberts. They split about evenly last week. Wilson had 13, Roberts had 12. I imagine in a game like this, you want an Landon Roberts because he's an old-school thumping linebacker, a tone setter, a downhill type of guy. Wilson has had his moments. He's athletic. He's great in pursuit, but he's not going to be the in-the-box guy that Roberts is.
So let me ask this about Queen. Is Queen the guy who – does he play weak side on the early downs and then move to the mic on third down, or is he a mic every down player?
Yeah, he's a mic every down. They don't shift or flip in terms of the strength of the formation. The whole Buck and Max thing has kind of blurred those lines. It's not really a true strong side guy or weak side guy like there had been in years past. I would call Queen the mic, but he's not really changing depending on how the offense aligns.
Okay. That's kind of what I wanted to understand there.
Yeah.
All right. Defensive backfield. Talk us through it.
Yeah, like I said earlier, two key acquisitions in trading for Dante Jackson, who has regressed some. He's battled a shoulder injury throughout this year, has a hamstring injury, expected to play against Baltimore on Sunday. Overall, though, he's been a really quality number two. When they dealt for him, my whole criteria was just don't be a liability. He's been more than that. He's been an asset to the Steelers. Joey Porter Jr., opposite number one corner for this team. Penalties have been an issue, three of them last week. He did not have a good game against Washington, but he's still your number one corner with the traits to compete and to run with guys and to be able to make plays on the football. Not going to be a big interception guy. He's got two career picks. You guys know the first pick last year in the end of the jump ball to Odell Beckham Jr. Only has one since, but this team's clear-cut number one corner, no question about that. They got a rookie in the slot, Beanie Bishop Jr., undrafted out of West Virginia. He's taken his lumps. He's gotten better. We'll see how division of labor between him and Cam Sutton gets split. At safety, Minkah Fitzpatrick, still Minkah. The interceptions have not been there. He's in a terribly prolonged interception drought, but he's still Minkah Fitzpatrick. Teams don't throw near him. He takes away the middle of the field. That's real estate. Teams just don't even try to test. And for my money, he's still the best tackling safety in football. Deshaun Elliott, the hammer, strong safety. Talked about him earlier. One other just quick thing to mention in terms of matching personnel against Washington, it was interesting. Pittsburgh had an approach to play the run and play the pass. When Washington would have three receivers on the field, Pittsburgh would play what I call their 3-4 nickel, where they would stay in their Oakey base front, three down linemen, four linebackers. They would put three corners on the field and only one safety. Elliott would come off, Cam Sutton would come on to match the slot. And so they're still respecting the run and playing the pass against 11 personnel. Want to see if that strategy continues against Baltimore.
Okay. Elliott off for that package, right? Elliott would not be on the field.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Elliott makes sense. Off and Cam Sutton had come on. Cam Sutton did not look great last week. Washington had a couple of chances, did some over routes against him and Daniels just missed. That really would have changed the game had those been completed, but it was also Sutton's first game back in a long time with that 8-game suspension. So there probably was some rust to knock off as well.
Couple of very dramatic games leading into this one. Alex, always a pleasure talking football with you whenever I get the chance. I always like to finish with this. We don't do score predictions or anything silly like that, but pick a player on each side of the ball you think matches up well against the Ravens.
Oh, that's a good question. And I just have to mention briefly, because it's what I like to nerd out about, Ken, but special teams. I mean, Chris Boswell's having a fantastic season. I mean, he's right on pace to match David Akers' record for most field goals in a season. Probably not a stat that you would love to celebrate as an offense. You want to finish some of those drives off, and Pittsburgh did last week, but Boswell has been just fantastic. Like I said, special teams, they got a punt return touchdown, they got a punt block. Miles Killebrew is one of the best punt blockers in football. Always have to be concerned about him. They got two field goal blocks this year. They probably should have had more. Some are called back by penalty. And so Danny Smith's unit's done a really good job. One of the best in football this year. They had to replace their punter. The punter got hurt, is out for the season. They've been able to handle that. Their gunners are doing a good job with James Pierre and Ben Skoranek. So it's been a really tight unit overall. To answer your question, in terms of the best matchups to look at, I don't know how well Stanley has played this year. I want to see how maybe Nick Herbig handles him, and then Watt against now Rosengarten's going to be certainly one to watch. Who do you guys have at guard? Is it Voorhees?
Guard Fa'alele, and on the other side, McCary at left guard.
Okay. I mean, I just want to see like a Landon Roberts, because you guys are pulling guards a ton this year. It feels like you're running a lot of power, and Landon Roberts is a guy that'll take on that challenge. And so I don't know if that's going to be a matchup that favors Pittsburgh, but it should be a really fun matchup to watch overall. I mean, yeah, even just something like Deshaun Elliott and Mark Andrews will be, I think, a good one to take in. For Pittsburgh offensively in this one, trying to rack my brain through. I'm still kind of doing some of my tape study on Baltimore right now. I mean, just Pickens and Humphrey should be fun. Again, I don't know if that's going to be a matchup that's necessarily tipping in Pittsburgh's favor, but you just have two, I think, really talented players in Pickens and Humphrey. And Humphrey, you know, can play in the slot and can probably travel with Pickens if that's the approach Baltimore takes.
And that might be a new approach, but they have not been a traveling team. I was just going to say this, you get the matchup you want against the Ravens, which has been a big problem for Brandon Stevens, is that the bigger, more physical receivers have gone over on his side and extremely vulnerable to the back shoulder throw on the sideline. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any defense for him. He never looks for the football. He plays the hands of the receiver, very much a man coverage in the strongest sense, corner. And he's physical. He's got good size to him. He just can't find the football. And so used to be, this was Humphrey a few years ago too, by the way, when Humphrey had his big fumble recovery season, it's because he's trying to baseball bat the arms loose from after the ball is at the catch point. Stevens, that's where he tries to play the football, is at the catch point. So okay. Does that change your answer? Might be Pickens versus Stevens then?
Yeah, no, I mean, I watched them against the Bengals, and Humphrey was not on Chase the entire time. So that was interesting. Actually, I think it was a time where like Yosefos was in the slot and Humphrey's over there. I'm kind of wondering like, why is Humphrey on Yosefos in the slot when Chase is outside? Yeah, I apologize. I should have a better answer for that. I mean, obviously, Baltimore's a really talented team, so it's not like there's a matchup that you're like, okay, Pittsburgh can definitely take advantage of this matchup. I think it's just really, I mean, you probably have some better answers for it than I can, but I just think there's going to be some fun matchups about kind of some similarly built type of guys, whether that's Roberts against your physical guards, or Elliott versus Andrews, or Pickens versus Humphrey or Stevens, whatever corner they're facing. Obviously, if Kyle Hamilton plays, that'll be a game changer for you guys as well. So I just think there's some good matchups, maybe not matchups that I expect Pittsburgh to give them the true advantage for.
Okay. All right. Outstanding, Alex. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online or read your material.
Yeah, you can follow us at SteelersDepot.com. In this case, it'll be on Friday. We have a complete Ravens scouting report. We break down the offense, defense, and special teams individually and schematically. And so for Ravens fans interested from a Steelers fan perspective, but what we think the Ravens offense is built like, where they're strong, where they're weak, we'll have a complete breakdown on the site on Friday morning. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Alex_Kozora.
Highly recommend that, by the way. That's Alex_Kozora. Highly recommend Alex. He's one of the guys I turn to immediately when I have questions about the Steelers. I want to know what's going on. Really appreciate you making time for us again, Alex. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I want to hear your ideas for some interesting, pithy short material. Try and keep it to content that we can do in about 20 minutes or less. Otherwise, if you want to do something for the show, show it to somebody else. Just word of mouth this to one new person, and I'd appreciate that. Alex, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Ken, and good luck on Sunday.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us, for open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.